I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Successful media and public affairs consultant, accomplished entrepreneur and national writer and contributor, attorney who served in the Missouri House of Representatives, worked in the White House and CNN, thought leader, entrepreneur, and host who takes the conversation to the next level.
Prepare to get rare access to fascinating guests.
You're connected. You have the it factor. You've joined
Grill Nation.
Everybody over there!
Get on up!
Everybody up there!
Get into it!
Ooh-way.
Connect with Jason on Twitter at Jason Grill. Connect with the show on Twitter at Grill Nation Show. And online at grillnationshow.com.
Welcome your host of Grill Nation. Always dressed up and ready to go, even in a radio studio. Here's Jason Grill.
Hello and welcome to the Grill Nation Show. I'm your host, Jason Grill. Thanks for joining me today on 980 AM KNBZ, and as well, if you're listening today on iTunes via podcast, we greatly appreciate that, and we greatly appreciate it if you've hit up our website at thegrillnationshow.com, where you can find all of our sponsors, supporters, contributors, all of our old shows, social media information, as well as photos of each and every one of our guests that I post each and every week on grillnationshow.com. You connect with me on Twitter at Jason Grill and at Grill Nation Show, and you can search for me on social media. Just type in my name, Jason Grill. We appreciate you joining us each and every week here on the show. Before we get to our guests today, I want to thank our partners and supporters of the Grill Nation. They are title sponsors of the show, are Truss, MoBank, BOK Financial, and Two West Companies, and Ryan Rink. Contributors of the Grill Nation Show are the Rieger and Jay Rieger & Co. Ryan Mabey is a guest host and honor contributor. KCADC, the Kansas City Area Development Council, very cool event they had the other day with their annual luncheon. Tim Cowden and the crew did an awesome job. I'd advise you to check out the videos that they put together for that event. They were really cool. I'll share those on my social media as well. And last but not least, Brian Sarf with True Wealth & Company, a guest host and on-air contributor who joins us each and every month and brings on great guests. Recently, he brought on Lamar Hunt Jr. to the show. We had a lot of fun with him the other day. So, check out those title sponsors and contributors at grillnationshow.com. Okay, before we get to our guests today, I also want to mention I appreciated all the folks that came out to our guest party, Grill Nation Show party. We had a little event for all of our great guests we've had over the years. We've reached 6 years since we started Entrepreneur KC and the Grill Nation Show. I really appreciate all those people that came out to show their support. And actually, the whole point of the event was to introduce former guests to current guests to everyone to hopefully grow their businesses and to network. So I appreciate you all coming out for that. If you're listening and you're a former guest, I want to continue to do those events and to send out hopefully at some point a monthly or quarterly newsletter to continue connecting the great people that come on this show and their businesses because they're all doing great work here in the region. On today's show, we have John Lovell, who is the owner of Lovell Sagebrush Insurance Group, a recent news to report about the new name and the merger. He is a guy that I met through mutual friend Will Gregory, I believe, many years ago. Might have been another Mizzou guy. I don't really remember. But it definitely happened at a football game or a basketball game at some point. But he is a active person in the community. He's an entrepreneur, and he is a guy who's taken a liking to civic involvement and what's going on in the business community. And also growing his own company, so I wanted to have him on today to talk about some things going on and also to, we'll maybe talk about some golf, maybe some current events and whatnot. So welcome to the show, John. How are you today?
Fantastic.
It's good to see you, man.
It's good to see you, too.
I appreciate you joining me today. I know that I called you kind of late to come on the air.
Yeah, but I can't imagine how many people had to cancel before I finally got the call, but nonetheless, I'm happy to be here.
I know you've always said we should start a radio show together, so this is our first opportunity to talk on the air. So yeah, we'll see how it goes.
We will, won't we?
So tell us about yourself. You grew up in Lee Summit, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. So my father moved us there almost 39 years ago from Alabama. So I'm actually born in Alabama. My whole family's from the South. But
what? How old were you when you moved?
Four.
Okay. So you didn't really, you remember a little bit about it or about Alabama or?
Very little.
Okay. Right.
But we spent some summers there vacationing, visiting relatives. So,
what part of Alabama was that?
Sheffield, Alabama. Okay. Which is
this where you get the southern accent?
Yeah.
I thought that was from Lee Summit. Now I know it's from Alabama.
It's from Alabama, that's for sure.
So you moved to Lee Summit when you were 4 years old. Okay.
My dad took a job as the director of Parks Recreation for the city of Lee Summit. So when we moved there, I think there were 20,000 people living in Lee Summit. Now there's close to 100,000. So
I knew it was getting close to 100,000 or more.
Yeah.
When you really think about that, that's pretty interesting. I mean, you think about like Columbia or Lawrence. I think they have like, you know, around 100,000 to 150,000. So it's crazy that it's almost the same size as those places.
Well, and if you just think of land area, Lee Summit is second only to St. Louis in the state of Missouri.
It is?
Yes.
Wow. I did not know that.
A little nugget for you there.
it's a definitely a growing community. So when you were growing up, obviously, it wasn't that big.
One high school.
Okay. Lee Summit
one junior high. Right.
How many high schools do they have now?
They've got three.
Three high schools. Okay. Yeah. So you grew up there. You went to high school there, Lee Summit High School.
That's right.
And then went off to Mizzou. What was that like? A lot of fun?
Can I say what it was like? it was a lot of fun.
We're about the same age. You graduated, I think, a year or two before I graduated from college, kind of the same age bracket. It was a lot different back then.
Completely different.
Yeah, but good times.
No cell phones.
But a lot of fun. And what'd you get, a degree in business there?
Yeah, degree in business, finance.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so after college, what was your next step in the journey?
Well, I think it's interesting. When I was graduating from college, I think you either
this
went
is 1998.
To 98, correct.
Yeah. Did you do a 4-year or 5-year plan?
That was a 5-year plan.
Okay.
5 years. Had I known I was paying for that, I might have got out of there quicker. I didn't realize the whole student loan thing. My dad wasn't real transparent on that. But I think back in that time, you were either going to go into some sort of professional services type degree. So it was engineering or law. And then what was kind of left over was, I'm going to go get into sales of some sort. So stockbroker was really popular back then.
Yeah, it was. And the economy was good.
Yeah,
when
it was really good.
So when I was at SLU in 01, a lot of people went to work at big, you know, accounting firms, finance firms, investment bankers and whatnot. There was a lot of jobs.
A lot of consulting jobs too.
Yeah.
Like Arthur Anderson was a big one that a lot of people took. I actually went into insurance.
You did.
Which is odd. Because I'm back in it now.
Right out of the sheet you did.
Yeah. Took a job as a producer with a group called Gilbert McGill, which is now the Hayes Group.
And that was in Kansas City?
Yep. It was in Kansas City. And I lasted about 8 months.
What happened there?
I'm not sure I was ready for that. It was old school mentality. It's like, here's a stack of papers and here's phone numbers. You call these CEOs and try to get us meetings. And
so it was a sales gig.
It was a sales gig, right. There was no professional experience or knowledge about what I was selling or what I was doing. It was mostly call these numbers and see if you can get in front of them.
So you then worked for a company that worked with law firms, because that's kind of when I got to know
Between
you.
That,
okay.
I actually left and went in the golf business for a couple years.
You did?
So I was a golf pro, assistant golf pro, for about 2 years.
When did you get that on your LinkedIn page?
Yeah.
That really actually helps you. I'm just, as a branding type person, that
you
makes
like that?
You more marketable.
Okay.
Well, we're going to add that. So I want to talk about that when we get back, because you love the sport of golf.
I
played golf with
you
one time in my life. You had one bad shot in 18 holes. At Loch Lloyd, it was on number 5. You hit it. I think you might have hit it into the trees or right around the trees, but it wasn't in the middle of the fair. It was your only
I love
bad.
That you remember my bad shot.
It was one.
And none of my good shots.
Because I tell that story whenever I play golf with people. I say, whenever I play there, I said, I played with a friend here once, and he was a member, and he had one bad shot. There's a couple people I want to set you up with for golf that are on the same level as you, pretty close, that have had one or two bad shots, but nothing like you had.
Do you remember the tip I gave you that day?
Yeah, I do.
What was it? It's pretty windy
when it's
that
breezy,
day.
You swing the club easy.
That's right. That's right.
And it's helped me ever since.
Yeah.
John Lovell is our guest today. It's going to be a lot of fun. We're going to talk more about what he does and then break down some really exciting things happening in our local community and have some fun as well. You're listening to The Grill Nation Show.
Magic in the air.
Welcome back to the Grill Nation Show, 980 AM KMBZ. And if you're listening on podcast via iTunes, we appreciate it. Always great to have you here at the Grill Nation and listening to the show. John Lovell is our guest. He is the owner of Lovell Sagebrush Insurance Group. We'll get to that in just a second. But we were talking about John's love of the game of golf. He's actually really good. If you want to check him out on the handicap system, he's on there. It's pretty good. But
1507953. That's my gin.
But he gives good advice. And one of the good things about when you play with John, very average golfer, 13 to 15 handicap, he brings you up. He made me feel good. Since then, I've taken two lessons with a guy named Zach up at the National. He's helped me out a little bit.
He's so really good.
He is
Zach's
good.
One of the best.
He is good. So you mentioned you were a golf assistant pro for a while in your journey.
Yeah.
What was that like? Where was that
So
at?
I really fell in love with golf when I was at Mizzou. I worked at a municipal golf course there through college. And just through playing and no lessons or anything like that, got decent at the game. So
that's when you got decent in college.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
We both started pretty late.
Yeah. Yeah.
I figured you had a club in your hand at 2 years old.
No, I would say that I had a club in my hand growing up, but sporadically. My grandfather's a big golfer.
Mm.
So every summer we go visit him in Knoxville. He was a professor at UT. And
so what was the decision for you to leave the job, the cush job, and become an assistant pro?
Well, there was nothing cush about making 100 cold calls a day when you're 21.
After you got your college degree,
you're
then
right.
You decided I'm going to...
Right. Well, I had a lot of friends in the golf business, and I think I had maybe, I was a little naive, thought I had the ability or maybe an opportunity to play professionally. It's like, if I go get in the golf business
sure.
and I work at it and I've never really practiced, I've never really taken lessons.
Didn't play at college?
No, I never played tournaments or anything like that either. So, So I got decent at the game. I worked for a management company. Golf courses were opening everywhere. So this would have been like in 99 to 2001. They were just popping up everywhere. I had a lot of friends in the golf business. I love playing. And so I went and kind of had a fast track to be a GM at one of these management companies, golf courses across the country. And, you know, I did that for a couple years. And
so you were traveling a lot?
No.
I was
actually in Blue Springs.
Okay.
Adams Point Golf Course. So,
okay.
And I was just an assistant pro there. So.
So did you ever try to get on the tour?
No.
The
I think you
tour?
Learn real quick. You learn real quickly how good the pros are and how tough a road that is to get there.
I don't know, John. I birdied the 16th at what's that course in Scottsdale? The Stadium Course. And I turned on the TV about a month later and I saw Justin Thomas double bogey it. So you know, I'm just saying,
you got a chance.
Yeah.
Right.
That does make you feel good though when you play one of those professional courses. I've been trying to do more of that, and you have a good hole, and then you see the pro totally screw up. It kind of makes you feel good. It makes you keep going back out there, right?
Yeah.
When you hit a few good shots.
Golf will humble you really quickly. So
it does. And then when you're playing good, it's just so much fun. So much
fun. For sure.
Well, that's cool, man. So then you, we'll speed up the process here, but then you got into kind of working with law firms. You also worked for a couple other companies along the journey, right?
Right. Yeah. So I left. I realized quickly that the golf business probably wasn't going to get me where I wanted to go professionally. And I also realized I wasn't going to turn pro anytime soon. So I just took a sales job with a company that worked with law firms. Litigation support services is what we did.
Mm-hmm.
And I spent a couple years there. And I think that's when I realized that maybe I was more of an entrepreneur, problem solver, someone that thought, maybe there's a better way to do this. And that's when I took my first leap into.
Do you have a lot more flexibility, though, in those sales jobs?
Oh,
as far
sure.
as making your schedule, that's
sure.
the thing I always see. And
yeah.
you know, the sales guys get to like do a play golf on a Friday and build business. You know,
well, yes,
but they're not
no.
at a desk all day,
right.
Like they used to be,
right?
Making cold calls.
I mean, there's still
there's
an
LinkedIn
element
now.
Of,
there's coffees. You're out of the office more.
Yeah, I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I still think that there's the opportunity to reach out to people on a cold call basis. More of it's more warm now because you have access and the ability to reach people through LinkedIn and other ways. But let's be serious here though. Sales guys aren't just on the golf course
okay.
all day. At least the successful ones aren't. So I learned that real quick when I got
so why did you decide
business.
To start your own business? Why did you have that moment of like I'm you were doing pretty well. I know you're a guy that's been successful in your career. Why did you decide in 2000 what very recently, 2017, I think it was, to
this is my third jump into entrepreneurship. So when I was working in a litigation support services company, I actually left and started my own and did that for 12 years.
Okay.
Yeah. And that was Versadox. And then DCI, or Discovery Consultants, was a spinoff
of
Versadox.
I'm looking at your LinkedIn, and I'm seeing co-founder, founder. So you've been doing this for years.
Yeah. My thing is, I mean, I'm stubborn, but when I get in and I'm part of a system or a big company, so that Lanier Group was a Fortune 500 company.
Mm-hmm.
I always find inefficiencies or problems with maybe how they're doing things and think that there could be a better way to do it. So I think that's what always leads me to take that leap and kind of go out on my own and try something.
What brought you back to working for someone else? You said you've been an entrepreneur three different times. Why'd you jump back and forth?
The most recent one was that I felt like when I joined Cobbs Allen was that I was going to be in the insurance business again, and it's a big company, but it was new to Kansas City, so I felt like it was going to satiate that need or desire to work for myself, because we were the first satellite company and had
so
the
you're
opportunity.
Kind of building Kansas City's office.
Yeah, and that's when I, it turned my focus to being more involved with the community and the city, and it's how I got involved with KCADC and met some wonderful people. And just, you know, part of it is just going out, being visible, being present. Back into Lee Summit and connecting with my roots there, and getting in tune with the business community. I mean, those are all things you have to do. And then
you got the urge again to
go on because
your own.
again, I think this is, you know, I think it's a it, you know,
it's
my entrepreneurial
blood.
Journey has always been looking at a set of problems and then being able to be nimble and actually change the way things are done, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And insurance is kind of this is an old way that we've done it.
Mm-hmm.
This is how we've always done it, and that's how we'll continue to do it. And if you like doing it that way, then you'll fit here.
So give us the quick elevator pitch on what you do every day and your company does.
Yeah.
And then we'll get into
the new news.
Yeah.
You know, we manage risk for businesses. I mean, it's simple as that. I mean, we pride ourselves on being a professional services firm, but not layered with a bunch of red tape and corporate ideas, I guess. We're nimble.
Mm-hmm.
We embrace technology, innovation. We look at things differently than maybe a traditional broker would.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's great opportunity for that.
Yeah,
I think you're seeing it. I mean, I saw you liked a new announcement, a couple of law firm buddies of ours that went out on their own. And I think you'll see more of that in the professional services field, because the biggest misconception in my mind is that somehow you're better served with the big agency.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe in some cases you're not. And so being nimble and flexible like we are and being able to adopt new ways of doing things, I think gives us a unique advantage, because they're still getting the same people and knowledge and experience. We're still selling the same product as the big guys.
Mm-hmm.
We're just looking at ways to do it better and more efficiently.
Yeah.
And I think that's what people want now. They want you to think outside the box. They want you to help them better understand what you're doing for them. And so
I see what you're saying there, as far as the way the economy's changing with contractors, consultants, smaller boutique firms. The issue is people want John at every meeting. You know, and I have, let's say I have 10 clients.
Right.
And they all are, you know, your senior level, they all have big issues. You can't be there all the time for all of them. So that's the issue when you don't have a big backbench, right? And back-end team to help you out.
Yeah.
But then again, you do have that personal touch that you're talking about. If you don't feel like a number when you're a smaller company and you're helping people, and you can usually deliver better results more nimble.
Yes.
And
more nimble,
more affordable.
That's right.
That's important too, right? Costs.
I mean, price is always an issue.
Mm-hmm.
We just want to make sure that's not the most important issue.
So you've been doing this now for the new gig for over a year. Recently, you just told me off air, it used to be called the Lovell Insurance Group. Now it's called Lovell Sagebrush Insurance Group. Tell us about that. The final.
Yeah. So
segment.
This is just, I think, how life works, right? So remember I said my first job out of college was with a group called Gilbert McGill.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the first.
Gilbert McGill sounds like a law firm.
I know. It's good. And it sounds like a show, TV show. Anyway, one of the first, executive producer or vice president at that firm, 4 months into my stay there, left to go start his own deal.
Mm-hmm.
20 years later, I'm out on my own getting ready to start my own insurance group, and I run into him by happenstance. And I said, Joe. And he said, John. And I said, what are you doing? He's like, I've got my, since I left Gilbert McGill 20 years ago, I've got this great boutique firm that services a bunch of national accounts with my team right there in Lee Summit. Hmm. And he said, we should figure out a way to work together. You know, I want a perpetuation plan. I've got some great resources. Is there a way for us to figure this out? So we started that
talk. When did you start that talk?
Last December.
Oh, wow. So that's a long time.
Yeah. I've had some partnerships that just partnerships are difficult. And I think it's really important to figure out where you align with your partner, especially from a value and kind of vision perspective. And so we took our time figuring that out.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to tap some of the resources he had on the back end.
Yeah.
He really liked my vision of kind of changing the way things are done in that industry, using some new technologies and being more efficient, nimble, as mm-hmm. we say.
Mm-hmm.
And it also opened up a vertical that I didn't have access to, which is group health insurance. So it's another area that we can serve businesses.
So that is pretty recent news.
Yeah, we haven't really done the official press release.
There's no website yet, right?
We've changed the branding. No, it's up.
It is?
Okay. Levelsagebrush.com.
Okay.
We're working.
Should have done my research before I brought you in today.
Well, I know. You called me 15 minutes before we got here. So.
Oh, man. No, that's not true. So levelsagebrush.com. Appreciate or love the listeners to take a look at that. And, John, when we get back from the break, I want to talk about some current events and topics, and also talk more about what's going on in economic development here in Kansas City. You're listening to the Grill Nation show on 980 AM KNBZ. Thanks for joining us today.
I got that sunshine in my pocket, got that good soul in my feet. I feel that hot blood in my body when it drops.
Welcome back to the show, Grill Nation show here on 980 AM. I'm your host, Jason Grill. It's been a fun show so far. I appreciate you joining us today, as always, on 980 or on iTunes via podcast. Again, you can connect with me on Twitter at Jason Grill and search for me on all their social networks. Jason Grill, I'll post photos of our guest today as well, who's John Lovell, Lovell Sagebrush Insurance Group, and also a civic-minded guy. John, you're into economic development. We talked a little bit about KCADC. Tell us about how you've been involved there. I know that there's a lot of things happening as far as recruiting businesses to Kansas City, growing entrepreneurship, workforce development, talent, all those great things.
Yeah. Well, I was first introduced to KCADC through the Lee Summit Economic Development Council.
Mm-hmm.
And I went as a guest at the annual luncheon. And I mean, if you've never been
to
that.
Which one did you go to?
So this was like... It was like 3 years ago, and they brought in two guys.
I saw that. They had the panel.
Yeah, and they were talking about ways to Kansas City could attract
mm-hmm.
More businesses and some of the.
You should have seen this week's or the this year.
I was there.
You were there?
Oh, yeah. I saw your tweet up on the board.
Oh, my God. I love that.
But
love
if you've never been to that event and you go to it, you're like, okay, this is the penultimate.
They just
annual
do such
lunch.
A good job.
Oh, I mean, the production, Tim, everyone, the content, the pacing, the food. It's how every event should be.
Yeah.
And when I went there and I saw that, and I was still at Cobbs Allen at the time, I was like, if we want to be visible and present in Kansas City, we got to be a part of this group.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was able to get our group involved and join. And then, you meet Tim and Jennifer and some of the other people there, and you just want to be a part of that group.
Yeah.
I mean, they love this community and they love the surrounding communities, and it's a good place to be.
They worked really hard on that Amazon proposal. They just announced that Amazon will be going to New York and Northern Virginia if those cities need an economic development push, right?
I mean,
New York City, we need some jobs.
Right.
I was kind of surprised. I when those two cities were announced, I didn't think they were going to get the place, but Kansas City was obviously very competitive with that, and top 25, I believe. So
yeah, maybe just outside that first cut, too, as Tim likes to tell that story. So,
yeah, it's just interesting. It'll be. I've heard they're going to potentially rebrand Crystal City to the National Landing. Tons of tax incentives. Like I'm reading, almost $600 million for the Virginia side of it, which is just crazy, but. The annual average salary is going to be $150K for these jobs.
That's pretty good jobs.
I know. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And it's what, 30,000 more people
right.
into these two markets, which they can sustain that obviously in New York and in Kansas and Northern Virginia pretty much is almost like its own city now.
So it's interesting. I was at a Lee Summit Economic Development Council meeting and the panel was discussing, the Amazon, proposal when that was sent out. And so Lee Summit was given the opportunity to put something together for that group. And but what they measured was like, what's the impact? Like, what incentives are we giving? And then this influx of people. Now, not saying Amazon would come there, but it's something that communities had to think about when they're putting these proposals together is, you know, how does this affect our community? How does this affect the infrastructure, what we have here?
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll say this. It's funny. I'm reading the article today on CNN Business, and Kansas City was mentioned in the article from what Mayor James did with his creative five-star reviews. It's still getting published. And then I know the mayor of Little Rock, they basically did an amazing campaign down there too. And the last thing I'll say about this, John, is that Nashville was awarded a side project of 5,000 customer fulfillment jobs, transportation, supply chain activities. So that's pretty big for Nashville, getting 5,000 new jobs. That's a lot. And that's one of our peer city competitors. So
are those quality jobs?
Hopefully. But yeah, you're right. So we need to keep competing with those cities. And you're active in economic development. And Lee Summit obviously is a suburb of Kansas City, but has a role to play. Tell us about what you envision the future of Lee Summit, because you mentioned earlier it was small when you moved there. Now it's over 100,000 people.
Yeah.
And it's growing.
Yeah, and it continues to grow.
It's a big part of the Kansas City metro and the region.
Right. And the metrics and the things that attract new developments fit well in that community. And it's been, for the most part, I won't say underdeveloped, but there's a lot of opportunity still there where there might not be as much in some of the surrounding comparator cities. So I think that's what's attracting some of the growth there. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting is that I think you have to be mindful of what type of growth and development you want, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how development in general is changing. So I'm part of a project, a big mixed-use development that sits on the corner of 470 and Prior. 4 years ago, it was presented with a big box retail, some apartments, and a few restaurants. Council, thankfully, a couple years into it, realized that that might not be a sustainable use for that plan and said, hey, we'd like something that fits more with what's really occurring in our economy, which is a move away from big box retail, more restaurant, entertainment, multifamily, live, work, play type stuff. But there's a whole set of challenges with that, too.
I don't think people realize that, and I know that you sit on the Planning Commission, right?
That's correct.
When did you start there?
Just got appointed 2 weeks ago.
Oh, man. So you're going to have a lot of hearings.
Yes.
You ready for that?
Yeah, I've already had two.
You got to wear a tie to those things.
No.
Okay. Maybe not.
It's not an elected position.
Oh,
it's appointed. So I was appointed by our new mayor.
Oh, cool. So what people don't realize is that all of these development projects typically go in front of the Planning Commission, the City Council. A lot of late nights, at least in my business, over in Overland Park and in City Hall in Kansas City. I haven't been to Lee Summit before for any projects or City Hall, but
this is your official invitation as my guest.
There is a lot of long hours, a lot of potential, you know, work with the city staff and with elected officials to get these things done in communities. And if Kansas City needs to continue growing, I think people think that we have enough hotels, we have enough of this, that, and the other, but if you look at all the actual occupancy, we don't. I mean, in Kansas City downtown and Overland Park and Class A office, we have like no new Class A office. I mean, it's a big deal. And I think that you see so much stuff happening and you think, okay, we've done enough. But really, we're just getting started is the way I look at it.
I couldn't agree more. Yeah. And you talk about Class A office space. I mean, I think that obviously Kansas City is really pushing to try and get some spec buildings, but spec is not a real popular term for developers. And even in Lee Summit, one of our biggest challenges is like, how are we attracting businesses to that area, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't have a lot of Class A space. We would love to build some Class A space if you had the end user in mind. There's a lot of risk involved with that as a developer, you know.
Kansas City's a little more risk averse when it comes to Class A.
Yeah.
Because some cities just build it and the companies come. We need 50%
off. And the change in work. I mean, with the co-working spaces and you know, there seems to be less of a need of, you know, physically coming into an office every day. And so I think it's more difficult for people to find ways to, to justify doing that.
So how does the Lee Summit compete with a Overland Park? I know you guys are right by each other, right? I mean, your 435 goes right through.
Yeah, we're closer than most people think. I mean, it's there's 435 and there's back roads too. But, you know, I don't know that we necessarily think that we compete with Overland Park. But I think where there's a lot of metrics that say that we are very similar.
Mm-hmm.
We're in a unique position that I think what you're seeing is that national businesses or restaurant concepts or retailers are starting to see that there's this opportunity there. And so it takes time mm-hmm. for them to get word of that and then to get the idea that this might be a good place to come call home, so to speak. So, mm-hmm.
And it's truly not as far away as people think. I'm partial. I grew up in the Northland, as you know.
Now, that's a long way away.
I always said it's crazy to me how people think that Parkville or the Northland is farther away than Leawood or Lee Summit or Leawood, because it's like right over the bridge right there.
Oh, yeah. Easy to get to downtown.
I mean, I'm a member of the Deuce. That's like the closest golf course that's not an astronomical fee to become a member around anywhere close to where you live downtown. And so there's just all these communities. And so I hope that it's hard to like picture Kansas City because, again, our population has to continue to grow if we're going to sustain all of these different things. But I'm obviously very concerned with the urban core and with growing the actual businesses in downtown proper. I think that's one of the last things we need to do as a city now that we have growing residential. We need more companies to relocate to the city. I know that's against your principles.
Or the suburbs. But no, you bring up something interesting when you talk about urban core, because I think it's...
Well, just imagine, John, if Sprint had built their campus downtown with 30,000 people, whatever, 15, 20 years ago.
Right.
What that would have done for downtown at the time.
Oh, it would have been incredible.
A lot of foot traffic, more foot traffic. Well, now we're building that. I mean, I lived downtown for quite a while. There's so much stuff going on. You don't realize it until you live there. You just see like different events all the time, people all the time from... Cowboys at the country music concert to cheerleading competitions for kids to freaking, you know, Eminem concert. I mean, it's all over the map, right?
I mean,
and you don't, it's just, there's so much stuff happening. And it's just, if you could just put a business down there, a big company, that's why Amazon was so interesting to me. Like some sort of like a major brand. Just think of all the growth. Anyways, on my soapbox there.
No, it's true. And we look for stuff like that in Lee Summit too. It's, mm-hmm. you know, trying to, and we've mirrored, I think we've mirrored, or at least we pay attention to what's going on and been a success in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
So like if you ever came to our downtown, it's very vibrant, lots of good restaurants. They had the foresight to know that putting money into the downtown was going to be important.
Mm-hmm.
And so now I push to say, okay, we need some density down here.
Yes.
You know, how do we get a multifamily? How do we get a good Class A apartment down here? How do we continue... And it's hard in the suburbs.
It's very hard with your demographics, too, and people that move to the suburbs for land and space, and they've been there forever, and I get it. They don't want the density. We do. We know it's important.
Right.
So
it's everything. And if you can capture, you know, our opinion is that if you can offer some of the same amenities that an urban core might offer, a young millennial or a young graduate might choose to come to Lee Summit. Mm-hmm. Because they have some of those same things. And so until we do that, they'll go downtown or the plaza or wherever it is they want to live.
Mm-hmm.
And then you hope you bring them back somehow.
John Lovell is our guest today on the Grill Nation show. We'll be right back after the break for our final seven. We're going to talk about some current events here on the national level. You're listening to Grill Nation. Welcome back to the Grill Nation show. I'm your host, Jason Grill. I appreciate you joining us again for our final segment today here at 980 a.m. and on iTunes via podcast. John Lovell is our guest. He's with the Lovell Sagebrush Insurance Group. We've been talking a lot about economic development today and entrepreneurship, and now I want to dive into some current events. John, you've always been a political kind of current events fan, from what I understand, and we're on different sides of the aisle, but we're both pretty moderate, I think.
I agree.
Pretty pragmatic.
And I would say that my moderation or being more moderate is something that's evolved over time.
I think that is a lot of people in our age bracket. They're just kind of tired of partisanship and they want stuff to happen. And so you give us your thoughts about the last election, because we just came out of it, right? Midterm. I know your dad ran for the state.
Yeah, so personally, I had my first really foray into running a campaign or being a part of a campaign. My father ran for state representative.
In Missouri.
Yeah, District 35, Missouri, which is primarily Lee Summit.
Primarily a Republican area.
Yeah, I think there's only been, I think it's been almost 35 or 40 years since a Democrat's been elected in that that district.
So your dad got out of the primary. And then
barely got out of the primary.
Okay.
But so my dad, 38 years as parks director for Lee Summit, right? Mm-hmm. So city employee, running as a Republican, I think a very reasonable, pragmatic, moderate Republican. During the primary, he didn't run as far right as most people would tell you to go. So he didn't go get all the endorsements that usually that drive primaries. And he barely won.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad, in his opinion, was, wow, that's surprising to me. I've been in this community for so long. I've built our park system. This is a natural progression for me, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I think, to me, is the epitome of what public service should be, right? Is you go do something and then you decide to give a couple years as a public servant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that surprised him. And then we certainly were surprised at the election results. And it just is amazing to me how partisan things have become. And even on an election like that, where you see a man that's kind of given to the community and done a lot of great things, and really has been prepared to go lead and serve, basically just and not win. And
yeah.
It's interesting. And there was a lot of money poured into
negative,
calling him career politician, greed, corporate greed.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And he's never done any of the, he's worked for the city for 38 years. So
yeah.
It just is an interesting time. And I think it's hard to be a moderate,
mm-hmm.
which is hard to say, right? But it's like everybody says you're either Republican and I vote for you or Democrat and I vote for you. Nobody really is willing to cross that aisle and say, this guy just seems reasonable, pragmatic, experienced, mm-hmm. Willing to look at things from both sides and make good decisions.
The national level definitely affects things, even on the state rep level. And money obviously comes in. As a person who was elected in a very Republican area as a Democrat, I think I was 60% Republican at the time, you constantly had a battle, and I completely agree with you. A lot of it has to do with the national sentiment as well.
Yeah.
Like the wave elections, what the president's doing, which is very frustrating, especially when you are pragmatic and you get stuff done and you are bipartisan. It sounds to me like your dad was pretty bipartisan kind of guy, right?
Yeah, I think so, that makes
sense. So he learned a lot, I'm assuming. I love the shirts, by the way.
I love
the green color. You don't see green in politics very often.
It was
that's the parks thing, right?
It was intentional, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, we are different. Parks, the green was pulling from the parks and wanted people to look at it, the election differently and how they were picking someone. Didn't work.
What's funny is that a lot of Democrats won elections like that, and then Claire McCaskill did not win, which was the shock of the election night for me.
Yeah, and I think you saw that mostly in the Senate races,
mm-hmm.
Maybe where there's fewer. You're pulling from a bigger pool,
mm-hmm.
But certainly in the Congress, you saw tons of turnout.
So what do you want to see in 2020 from a presidential candidate that you support? Because there's going to be, obviously you're a Republican, so I don't know. Maybe there will be a challenge to the president. Who knows? There's all this talk. There's also talk about a Democrat Republican ticket. There's talk about the Democratic Party is going to have like 25 people running, just like the Republicans
yeah.
did, and the candidates are all over the board for that. It's going to be interesting. It's going to be a really interesting election.
You'd have to show me where being an independent or being a split ticket could actually work.
Yeah.
Greg Orman, yeah. Obviously that doesn't work, and it's
but Kelly, the new governor of Kansas, Laura Kelly, she got a lot of moderate support and Republicans. So there really wasn't a pathway for Orman in this race. It wasn't one-on-one.
Yeah.
And he had ran before, so I think that hurt him a little bit. But you're right. You have to kind of, how do you do that? How do you do that on a national level when everything's so partisan? And that's fueled a lot by cable news. That's fueled a lot by echo chambers. You know the drill.
Yeah.
Both sides.
And in the end, I'll be honest with you. I'm just kind of tired of all of it because it is so partisan.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that there's a mechanism in this country with two parties, basically Republican and Democrat, that you could actually get someone moderate and in the middle elected. Mm-hmm. I just referenced my dad's campaign. Maybe if he went further right, that would have helped.
get the bass out.
Yeah. And you know, for me, I think we're way too involved and interested in a lot of these things that are going on around us, whether it's through the news channels or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And in the end, I think, man, just put your head down, go to work and make the world a better place. Right. I mean, it's like, yeah. I could sit here and worry about all those things going on politically. You say, who would I like to see in 2020? Man, who? I don't know. Someone that seems normal, right?
Well, I got to tell you, John used to consider me a liberal. So
I was pretty far right back then. I had no reason to be.
So let's have some fun here in the last few minutes. You consider yourself a fashion advisor, according to your LinkedIn or your Twitter page, which, by the way, you're private, but your Twitter is John Level 3. Father, entrepreneur, fashion advisor, and golf lover. Where does that come from?
Which part?
The golf, the fashion advisor.
Typically, my fashion advising has to do with golf attire.
Okay.
So I'm not afraid to take on some of the PGA Tour players and what they're putting together in their outfits.
So who are you a fan of?
Who am I a fan of?
Of their attire.
I like Billy Horschel a lot.
Okay. He was wearing camo pants at the PGA Championship when I had him on
polo.
The...
I'm into the... It's more subtle these days. I'm not a white belt guy. Time a white belt is acceptable on a golf course is with white pants.
Okay, so I rocked some of the white pants last summer.
Yeah.
White shorts. White, you got to wear a white belt though, huh?
Yeah. You don't have to, but that's the only time a white belt is acceptable.
I did see Spieth wearing a white belt once in a while.
And you know what? I've actually tagged him in some tweets and Under Armour to let them know that that's not acceptable with dark pants.
So so you like Billy Horschel? Anyone else? What brands do you like?
I don't know. I like all brands for the most part. Mm-hmm. Just kind of more into the navies and subtle tones. It's not quite as crazy as it used to be. So
God, I gotta follow
like
more
a mono
and more of this.
Kind of a color pattern where it's kind of all working together.
I love it.
This thing just went in a really weird
direction. No, this
here's
is
my fashion advice.
This is a great direction. This is what we want, man. We want to have some fun here. We've got about a minute left on the show today with John Lovell. John, anything else you want to promote or talk about as we finish the show today? I know your new business is LovellSagebrush.com. Check it out. Anything else? You're very active in the community.
Yeah, so breaking news. Lee Summit announced
today. As we tape
today,
the show.
That's right, right. It's on the tape show. Lee Summit today announced that Mid-States Distributing has taken over the former Toys R Us facility in Lee Summit, which was a huge facility that was abandoned, distribution mm-hmm. facility that was abandoned when they went bankrupt and basically closed all their stores. So that's a good announcement for us. It should bring in a significant amount of new jobs, new quality jobs. And I'll just credit Lee Summit Economic Development Council, Rick McDowell, mm-hmm. our city manager, Steve Arbo, and our mayor, Bill Baird, for leading that charge.
Well, congrats on that, and congrats on getting involved in the Planning Commission. And,
yeah, it's
and,
exciting.
And city,
I like it.
City government, and also in your community with the EDC and everything you're doing with your business.
Likewise. I learned it from the best. Jason.
John Lovell has been our guest. He's a great guy. Kansas City, get to know him, and I appreciate him coming on the show today. Appreciate you joining us today on Grill Nation. We'll see you again next week. Have a good one. Take care.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.